From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has been under fire for years for violating people's rights, for struggling with corruption, and more. Now, with two recent shootings that have drawn community outrage, the LASD was marked by the ambush shooting of two of its sheriffs over the past few days. During tense protests being documented by local journalists, sheriffs violently arrested a reporter named Josie Huang and dismantled a protest camp across from City Hall, ostensibly in retaliation for the shootings. As the LASD is seen as symbolic of racist and violent policing in America, we turn today to an observer of this past weekend's tumultuous events. Her name is Diana Barbadillo, legal observer with the National Lawyers Guild of Los Angeles. Welcome to the program, Diana.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about the sort of history of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. That context, I think, is really important. I mentioned that there's been a lot of history of violence, of corruption. And then we have a sort of relatively new sheriff, Alex Villanueva, who was supposed to usher in a new chapter of fairness and reining in sheriff's deputies. And then just in the past few weeks and months, we had first the killing of Andres Guardado, and then the killing of Dijon Kizzy, black and brown people being brutalized. Is this an important context for discussing the weekend's events?
This is absolutely something that's important to contextualize, because it's really not, these really aren't events that are isolated to this past week, to this past weekend. There have been ongoing protests for months, even preceding George Floyd, about the treatment of the community by the sheriffs that are supposed to be in their service. So in terms of context, it really is just showing that the struggles that community members are facing in terms of getting accountability from the sheriffs is ongoing. So while events may have come to, you know, might be heightened over the last week, this is an ongoing struggle.
So the protest camp that had been set up outside or in front of City Hall in near Grand Park. Tell me a little bit about that protest camp. It was quite, it was basically completely dismantled this past weekend, right?
It was raided at about 3 a.m. on Sunday morning. It was completely dismantled. If you were to drive by it now, I think it's just a fence that's covering the area, preventing people from seeing what is now an empty field. That's a protest camp that had been going strong for about 98 days. It was set up by activists in the wake of the protests following George Floyd's murder. And it was a place for activists to come together. It was a place for people who were newly becoming radicalized or joining, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement to learn more, to learn how to organize. It was a safe space for activists to be able to really figure out how to get involved in the city, what the next steps are, how to outreach to other people. So it really is a big loss. And when we say it's a camp, it wasn't just a meeting place. For a lot of people, this was their home. This is where they had all their belongings. And so when the sheriffs raided, they took away their homes, and now there's a lot of unhoused people.
So what was the manner of the dismantling of the camp? And would you say that it was in retaliation for the shootings of the two sheriffs?
So at 3 a.m., while folks that were staying in the camp, the Black Unity camp, were sleeping, sheriffs came in and told them they had 15 minutes to disperse. This camp wasn't just a bunch of tents. They had set this up as a community. There was an eating area, there was a supply area, there were seating areas. And so to leave in 15 minutes was really difficult for a lot of people. So most people just had to get up and go with what they had, what they were wearing, and what they could reach nearby. So, and they were told to remove themselves from the area. So they couldn't even stay and watch to see what happened to their belongings. I would say that this move by the sheriffs is really in response to being called out by the community, by the National Lawyers Guild, for their actions in response to First Amendment violations. After Dejan Kazeev was murdered by sheriffs, the community and LA residents gathered together nightly last week to protest, to ask the sheriffs for accountability, to demand accountability, to just ask that Dejan Kazeev's case see some movement. And in response, the sheriffs acted violently. They tried to squash these protests. They used their less lethal weapons directly at members of the community. And last week, last Friday, there was a press conference in which the NLG essentially condemned all this behavior. And even at that conference, the sheriffs showed excessive force. They came in riot gear to our press conference. And shortly after that, we saw this camp get raided. So, like an activist camp at that. And so there is a connection to be made there between the sheriffs, instead of showing the community the accountability that they're asking for, instead going after the activists who are just exercising their First Amendment rights.
Let's talk about the shootings of the two sheriffs. Currently, there's a $100,000 reward for any information. There's a very grainy photo of what appears to be the shooter aiming his, I think it's a he, his gun at the car, the vehicle, the sheriff's deputy's vehicle, pointing the gun in, and two sheriff's deputies were shot, were in the hospital at critical condition. And then you had this very violent arrest of a local reporter named Josie Huang, who was, I believe, outside the medical center where the sheriffs were being treated and where protesters had gathered. Can you give me a sense of what happened around the shooting of these deputies and her arrest?
Sure. It's terrible what happened to those deputies. It's absolutely terrible. In the context of what followed afterwards, I believe after that word got around about which hospital those deputies were being taken to, Josie is a reporter that I've had many interactions with, and she reports locally about what's going on with the protests. She speaks with, you know, law enforcement, and so she went there to see what was happening because there had been reports that folks were possibly blocking the entrance to the hospital. To my knowledge, there were maybe two or three folks in the area, but no one was blocking the hospital as reported. Josie went to go find out what was happening. To my knowledge, Josie was speaking to sheriffs throughout the evening. She returned to her car, saw that something was happening, saw that they were possibly arresting some people. So she came back out as a reporter would, to find out what was happening. She was following behind them, and they saw her recording and decided that they would arrest her. And to be perfectly honest, that is also appalling. Her press badges were around her neck. They already knew she was press. They were speaking to her as press before that.
And our TV audience can see a video of her arrest right now. She is not a large person. There are several officers around her. She's on her stomach. She's being on the road in next to her car, and she's being arrested. In her Twitter, a post about it, she said it felt like being tossed around in the ocean and then slammed into rock. And I understand the sheriffs are claiming that they arrested her because she did not have her press credentials, which of course is not a reason for arrest. Even if she was a protester without credentials, it didn't seem to justify her arrest. But she apparently did have all her press credentials, as you said, around her neck.
She did. She had her press credentials around her neck, and it can be seen. I believe there are people who were on the ground also recording the interaction, and you can see her press badge, her press badges waving around her neck.
So she, was asking questions around this issue. She's covered these stories. I mean, would you conclude from everything that transpired over the weekend that her arrest, her violent arrest, might also be seen as a sort of retaliation by the LA Sheriff's Departments, who I suppose feel like they're under siege?
I think in general, the sheriff's department is feeling under siege. As you said, there's sort of an us versus them mentality, and them is starting to encompass the press. I can't say definitively whether she was targeted because she'd been covering these protests, but I can say that there was a failure on the part of the sheriffs to acknowledge her as a member of the press who was exercising her First Amendment right as well. And as so far as the press goes, I think there's just generally been a disregard at the moment for making the differentiation between a protester, a member of the press, a member of the community. And so it's just been a lot of behavior on the part of the sheriffs that has been excessive in force.
Aren't the sheriffs making the protesters' point when they react so violently?
Absolutely. You know, there's a narrative that's being spun by the sheriffs about the outside agitator, that the neighborhood doesn't want them there, that these are people not from the neighborhood. And yet in the past couple of days, we've seen people from the communities come out and speak and say, we want you here. Thank you for being here.
Saying to the protesters.
To the protesters. I believe it's the matriarch of the Kazee family, Dijon Kazee's family, that said, we want you here. We invite you here. Thank you for being here. We stand next to you. And that's powerful. That means that there is a need to amplify the community's voices. And that's what people are doing.
And how have the LA sheriffs policed Black and brown low-income communities in particular, the communities that Andres Guardado, the community that Dijon Kazee lived in?
There's definitely been a pattern of over-policing. Dijon Kazee was detained or asked to stop because he was supposedly riding his bike on a residential street in the wrong direction. I can't tell you what the right direction is to ride my bike. I've probably done that on a residential street plenty of times. I live in West LA. I can almost guarantee that I will never be stopped by a police officer or in another area by a sheriff for riding my bike in the wrong direction. There's a history of over-policing, and that's really what the community is speaking about. The death of Dijon Kazee, the death of Andres Guardado, that's the violence that the sheriffs are, that people are protesting. That's the violence that the sheriffs are inflicting, and that's why people are out on the streets. These deaths are just the tipping point. That's been an outrage that's been festering for quite a long time.
And Andres Guardado's death is now being, he was the young man who was unarmed, and his death is being investigated as a potentially a part of an initiation right into a violent gang called the Executioners, a gang of deputies. I mean, this is a law enforcement agency that ostensibly says that it fights gang violence in Los Angeles, but it is literally harboring its own gang.
Right. And it's not just one gang. There are multiple gangs within the LA Sheriff's Department with names and
tattoos, matching tattoos.
Matching tattoos. And so that is the allegation right now when it comes to Andres Guardado, is that the officer who shot him did so to be essentially initiated into his gang to, quote unquote, earn his ink. And so that is, when I say that this is ongoing violence, it's because the community at large knows about this. These gangs are not secrets. We know about this. It's just that there's no accountability. And so when there's no accountability, what is there for the average citizen to do than to go out and stand in front of the sheriff's department with a sign to ask for accountability? And that's what's been happening for several nights over the past several weeks. Just the demand for accountability. And the response that they get are less lethal weapons. Pepper bullet guns, rubber bullet guns, beanbag guns, flashbangs, stinger grenades. That's the response they're getting. Alex Villanueva was in the crowd on Monday night. He was in attendance on Monday night. I've been there every night. Citizens were calling for him. Can we speak to you? I live here. Can I speak to you? He stayed in the back, never responded. That night ended with multiple arrests. That was a week ago, and a week after the death of Dijon Kazee. That night did not end well. People were injured. I was hit. I'm a legal observer. I'm a third party.
I'm assuming clearly marked. I know the National Lawyers Guild observers often wear like fluorescent hats, etc.
We wear neon green hats. And in this case, the commanding officer also acknowledged me by name because I'd been there every night. Mm. There's a recognition, but there's also just a failure to care at that point. They don't care if there's legal observers in the crowd, just as they are not really taking into account whether there's press in the crowd or children in the crowd. There's a 7-year-old who felt the effects of pepper balls being sprayed by her feet because they shot into the crowd indiscriminately.
What has Alex Villanueva's response been to any of these? This is a man who is, as I said, he was basically elected promising a new chapter for the LA Sheriff's Department. He has gotten a press platform to speak out. He's routinely interviewed on local NPR affiliates as a featured guest. How does he explain away these allegations, this violence?
Sheriff Villanueva held a press conference, I believe last Thursday. In that press conference, he alleged that the people that were in the community protesting were outside agitators who were not even from the area. He alleged that there were multiple weapons, dangerous weapons. He put on display some of the things that protesters were wearing and referring to them as weapons. Let me sort of talk that through. When he says that they're outside agitators, that's an interesting phrase to use. Someone who spoke at the NLG press conference on behalf of Black Lives Matter referred directly to that reference of the outside agitator. Martin Luther King Jr. was called an outside agitator. We know him for his protests in Birmingham, but that's not where he's from. And in regards to the actual protesters, there's a lot of people in the city of LA who are not originally from LA. So maybe their licenses say they're from other places, but they're 100% residents of LA. And when it comes to the outside agitator narrative, the sheriffs tend to not even live in the county of LA, let alone the city of LA. And so it's interesting that that's the talking point that Sheriff Villanueva has been emphasizing. In regards to the weapons that he put on display, a lot of them, there's protective gear, helmets, soccer pads, signs made out of cardboard. That's what the protesters have been coming armed with.
I mean, and you can't blame them for protecting themselves, wearing protective gear, if they are being targeted with these so-called non-lethal weapons.
Exactly. And a lot of these non-lethal weapons, for example, beanbag guns and foam bullets, those are supposed to be fired at the ground. But there were protesters who were hit directly in the head, hit in the neck, hit in the chest. I've been hit in the leg with them as well. So, you know, there's the use of the less lethal weapons, and then there's the incorrect use of them as well. They're not less lethal if you're shooting directly at protesters. And if you were to, you know, as a legal observer, it's our job to sort of watch and listen to see how these munitions are being fired. Pepper bullets at the ground followed only 5 seconds later by flashbangs in the air and stinger grenades. 5 seconds after that, there's no warning. That's just firing into a crowd. And usually when it comes to these large, you know, gatherings, there's usually a dispersal order. And with a dispersal order, you're given so much time to leave and a direction to leave. The first couple of nights, there were no dispersal orders. There was just shooting. And with folks yelling and screaming, having to run away, which was also dangerous. And even when there was a dispersal warning, the protesters one night were told to retreat going north on a certain street. So the protesters retreated going north on that street and still faced fire. So it's become unpredictable, you know, how the sheriffs will act in the face of these protests.
Let's talk about oversight, accountability. This is, you know, we're supposedly living in a democracy where armed law enforcement supposedly aren't allowed to just run rampant, roughshod over people's rights. This is the LA County Sheriff's Department. That means the LA County Board of Supervisors is supposed to be conducting oversight over this very, very large department, because in LA, Los Angeles County is a massive county in terms of the area it covers. Covers the area I live in all the way up to the western part of the city and more, and includes many cities. You know, what sort of accountability do the County Board of Supervisors exercise over the Sheriff's Department?
I think it's interesting. I mean, there is accountability on paper, and then there's accountability in practice, and there's just not been a lot of accountability in practice. You know, there's several oversight committees, there's even civilian oversight committees for the sheriffs. And it just seems to be that any attempt at demanding that accountability just gets blocked, whether it's political or whether it's just a history of the sheriffs not being regulated in that way. There's just not a lot of accountability.
So what is the community demanding? What are the family members of Dijon Kizzy and Andres Guardado demanding? Obviously, there needs to be some justice for those two killings. But in the long term, the broader issue of over-policing of these low-income Black and brown communities is something that I know that, Los Angeles is one of the birthplaces of the Black Lives Matter movement. It has a very strong activist movement that leads the nation in terms of setting an agenda. Can you give a sense as an observer of what the community demands in the short and long term?
I mean, in the short term, specifically with those families just want to see some movement on the case. You know, there have been holds put on autopsies. There have been a lack of communication regarding the investigations. And so really, in terms of for those people and just in general, there's a demand that the LA County Board of Supervisors immediately hire an independent investigator to investigate all these shootings. There needs to be an independent investigation. Asking the sheriffs to investigate themselves clearly isn't working. And so that's first and foremost the main thing. And after that, there's too many resources going to the sheriffs. Every night, all of those munitions, those are resources that can be placed elsewhere. And so Black Lives Matter LA, not to speak on their behalf, but they've made their demands very clear too, and that is for the defunding of the Sheriff's Department.
Right. And this is a department that has, like LAPD, received a tremendous amount of funding. You can see it's evident by the equipment they carry and their gear as well. Well, give out a website, Deanna, for where people can find out more about the work that the National Lawyers Guild does. And if they're interested in becoming a legal observer or training to become one, how they might be able to join.
Right. I believe it's www.nlg-la.org.
That's nlg-la.org, and we'll post a link to that from our website as well. Deanna, good luck to you. Stay safe out there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Deanna Barbadillo, legal observer with the National Lawyers Guild of Los Angeles. We've been discussing the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department's violence. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.